Welcome to Nightlife, a bite-size episode.
Yes, we're off to the movies. It is time to talk about a couple of films that may have caught your eye and you're wondering whether you should go and see them or not. Well, let's seek the opinion of AAP entertainment reporter Danielle McGrain. Danielle, good evening.
Good evening, Tony. I do love talking movies, I must say.
Good. Well, I need to know about this Red Dog film. We're also going to talk about La La Land, starring Ryan Gosling and Emma Stone in a moment. But this Red Dog film, now, is this a sequel or a prequel? Because spoiler alert to anyone who hasn't seen the original Red Dog film, sorry, but the dog dies, doesn't it, in the original film? So where does this fit into the picture?
That's right, he does. Well, I was just thinking, it's been 5 years since the first Red Dog movie. So I feel like, is that the sort of the statute of limitations on spoilers? Are we allowed to talk about them after 5 years?
Yeah.
I guess that must be around the time. Yeah, look, it's sort of a prequel. I mean, the idea is that this man has brought his two sons to see the original Red Dog movie, and they're coming home from work. And of course, like probably a lot of kids who went to see Red Dog, they're hassling him for their own dog. Because, I mean, come on, you watch something like that and you're 10 years old, what's the first thing you're going to do? You're going to want a dog. So I think that the dad, he's painted as this sort of, you know, harried, works too much businessman, and he gets home and he's tucking his son in at night, and he gets this wistful look in his eye, and he goes, well, actually, son, you know, the idea is he might be looking at him as this out-of-touch dad, but in actual fact, he once was just like him and had a dog, and the implication is that it's Red Dog. It's never sort of implicitly stated, but he talks about sort of this origin story of Red Dog, and it all harks back to how this man was sent as a child to live with his grandfather, who's played by Brian Brown, in the Pilbara. And it's around 1968, and he finds this little puppy all painted in blue for some reason during some sort of storm, and he's caught up a tree, and so he names him Blue, and he follows him around. But the story is not just about sort of, you know, the dog and the kid growing up together, but about this kid sort of coming of age summer and the time period for Australia as well, 1968. So what was happening there in that part of the world, and you know, you've got sort of an element of Indigenous rights coming into play. You've got the music of the time. It's a really beautiful film because I think it's one for all the family, really.
You mentioned Brian Brown in the cast. Mm. Does this film have a completely new and different cast from the first Red Dog film, or do we see some familiar faces in both?
No, it's completely new. It's a whole other story. It sort of works very well as it's like an accompaniment film. So I think that they've done a good job of not making it feel like it's just been tacked on. It's its own entity, really, but at the same time, it will appeal, I think, to people who loved the first movie.
What an interesting approach. I can't think of another film that's had something similar. They either very clearly say this is a prequel, which is a new development in the last 10 to 15 years or so, or sequels, of course, are not at all unusual. If something hits the right note at the box office in particular, Hollywood can't rush out a sequel quick enough. So this one is sort of at arm's length, but definitely references the original Red Dog. And no doubt about it, all ages, all members of the family would enjoy it.
Oh, they will. And I think what's great about it is, I mean, the dad is sort of saying, look, I think this is where Red Dog has come from. I think it's from this dog that I had. But that's what we're saying. It's not a specific prequel. It sort of allows a little element of fantasy in, I think, which we need when we go to the movies, don't we? And yeah, absolutely. It will appeal to all ages because, you know, there's adult themes in there, but not explicit adult themes. Just, you know, as I mentioned, there's sort of the Indigenous rights issue. You know, you've got the relationship with the grandfather and the son and his grandson. And I think there's enough there to keep people intrigued. There's a little love story in there as well, and there's some great 1960s music played. You know, it's a really interesting sort of film, and it's all based around this sort of cattle station in the Pilbara. So it's a nice film.
Who, apart from Brian Brown, might we recognise in the cast?
Well, John Jarrett is in there, actually, a brief moment. He's not in there too long, but he has this really nice scene with Brian Brown when they sort of play the banjos together. I don't know if they actually played them in real life, but it's a nice scene. And the young kid, actually, Levi Miller, he's an up-and-comer, and you might have actually seen him. I think he's been in a few things, or at least if you haven't seen him, you will. He's one of those faces that will be around. And then the dad at the beginning is a British actor called Jason Isaacs, who you might know from Harry Potter. He was actually the Malfoy father. So the father of, do you remember the little blonde-haired sort of villainous kid?
Yes.
In Harry Potter.
Yes.
He played his dad in it. So I think it was Lucius Malfoy was his name. And I believe the son was Draco Malfoy, if I'm remembering it correctly. And they were actually, he's actually in it as well. So there's a couple of familiar faces, but also a few new ones, which is quite nice.
And Red Dog's in the cinemas now?
Yeah, that's right. Open on Boxing Day.
Righty-ho. We are chatting with Danielle McGrain. She's the entertainment reporter for AAP. This is Summer Nightlife on ABC Radio with me, Tony Arthur. And to go to our second movie now, La La Land, which stars Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling. Now, this is a film that is creating all sorts of interesting buzz, Oscar buzz in particular. The nominations aren't out for Oscars yet, but they are out for the Golden Globes. And if my memory serves me correctly, they're presented on around about the 9th of January. What is La La Land about, and why is it creating so much buzz, Danielle?
I know, it feels like there's no escaping it at the moment, doesn't it? It's sort of everywhere. And it's up for, it's been, you know, nominated for a Golden Globe, many Golden Globes already. It's a musical. It's an old-fashioned musical. Now, it's set in modern day, but it would remind you of those old musicals from Hollywood, you know, from the 1940s and 1950s, your sort of your Judy Garlands, your Fred Astaire's, your Ginger Rogers, and it stars Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling, who we've seen in a few other movies together. So they have this beautiful chemistry. So the movie is sort of playing off of that, but at the same time, it's a bit of an homage to Hollywood itself. You know, you've got the sort of the movie studios. Emma Stone is an aspiring actress. Ryan Gosling plays a wannabe jazz. Well, he is a jazz musician, but he's sort of trying to keep jazz alive. And his dream is to buy his own jazz club. And he's quite a purist when it comes to the art form. So they've got these sort of conflicting career ideas going on. So it's all set in this backdrop of sort of music, Hollywood, show business, but you know, at the heart of it, it's also a love story. So it's got every piece of the puzzle when it comes to your good Hollywood musical, I would say.
With the greatest respect, can they sing?
Well, I don't know if we're supposed to find it a little bit endearing, but I don't think Emma Stone in particular has the strongest voice. She's no match for your Judy Garland, say, for example. But she can sort of carry a tune. Ryan Gosling is marginally better than her, but I don't know if you know, but he actually sort of started his career off in the Mickey Mouse Club, which was that famous sort of TV show that Britney Spears and Justin Timberlake and Christina Aguilera were all on.
Yeah.
So you'd expect him to have a little bit of the musicality in him. So they're very average singers, to be honest. And I do think that's the one area of the film that disappointed me a little bit, because I think when you do watch those old Hollywood musicals, I mean, their voices are such a big part of it for me. You know, they're the incredible Judy Garland, and I've brought her up a few times, but she is sort of that quintessential sort of musical star of that era. And it was because she could act and she could sing, you know, and she could dance. And these two, like, they're great together, and they've got great sort of star appeal. But it was just that one area that I felt, you know, just let it down a tiny bit for me.
I suppose it is a dilemma for them, though, the director and the producers and the actors themselves. The alternative is to lip sync and somebody else sings the song. Mm. And a lot of people get turned off by that. That's something that makes them push a film away at arm's length, saying, if it's not you actually singing, it's somebody else. It's cheating, and I'm not going to go there. So it's best that they have a go, isn't it?
Or that they get a decent actor who can also sing very well. I don't know, just another idea.
But possibly you say they're playing off this established screen chemistry between Emma Stone and Ryan Gosling because audiences are lapping it up.
They are, and I think visually these two look amazing too, because, you know, Emma Stone, she's got this sort of bright, vivid red hair and these really expressive eyes, and they really make use of that. You know, there's lots of sort of... The dialogue is quite sparse, to be honest. I mean, there are some songs, there is some dialogue, but it's about the expressions, really, the dancing, the movement, and the expressions in their eyes. And she has extremely expressive eyes, and I can understand wanting to work with her because she's an extraordinary actress. But, yeah, I don't know. I still think there's probably other actors and actresses out there who could have done it too, but as you say, the star power alone is probably going to bring people to this movie, isn't it?
But Danielle, if we go back to the films you're referencing in the 40s and 50s, the big blockbuster Hollywood musicals, the thing that was good about them was that people could go off to the cinema and pay their money and sit there and for a couple of hours be fully entertained, not upset, not scared, not brought to tears necessarily, not have to think deeply. They just sat for a couple of hours and it all happened in front of them and they were entertained. Is that what happens with La La Land?
Absolutely. I think we're sort of going into an era where this is going to become more prevalent because, I mean, as the world gets a bit more threatening, disappointing, upsetting, I think that we're going to need movies like this. And I also think that that is maybe why there's such a desire for this film, you know. And look, it is beautifully shot, there's no doubt about it, and I actually quite liked some of the theme songs that they had in there. There's an opening scene basically that is very impressive, but I think following that they don't follow it with other big musical numbers. So I mean, it could have done with maybe one more of those, a really sort of big show-stopping one. But I do think it is escapism at its absolute purest form, and we will probably need that next year more than any other year.
And again, would all ages of the family, would young ones relate to this?
That's a tough one. I think that it's very brightly coloured and there's beautiful dancing moments in it, but I don't know if it would sustain their attention for the whole film. I think, you know, you'd have to be probably at least, you know, you're an 11-year-old perhaps. I think younger than that, it would be asking a bit too much of them to watch it and to be suspended, you know, in their imagination. I think there are a lot more children's movies out at the moment that would work better for them than this.
All right, so we might say PG for La La Land, but definitely a G rating for Red Dog?
Yes, I think so. I think Red Dog will appeal to everybody.
In fact, I'd say both films that you've analysed for us here tonight would be pretty much for the family. Bearing in mind La La Land, maybe they need to be about 12 or so on. But yeah, family, great family time. That's what family movies about. And this is the time of year to go out as a family and go to the movies, isn't it?
It sure is. It sure is. I mean, they are ideal for this time of year. And the thing is, you know, the weeks following, we'll start to get some of the heavy hitters, you know, those real Oscar nomination wannabe ones that deal with real sort of political issues and societal issues. So I think that this is the week to escape into Hollywood musicals, escape into the incredible Pilbara that we see in Red Dog. The region itself is almost a talking point alone because of the way it's shot in this film. And it's absolutely worth going and enjoying. And the country that we live in, you know, it's appreciating it. It's
terrific.
Wonderful for that.
Sounds like great stuff. Yeah, let's just enjoy ourselves at the movies for a change with Red Dog and La La Land. And Danielle, thank you very much for joining us tonight.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
Danielle McGrain, she's the entertainment reporter with AAP, reviewing those two movies for us here on Summer Nightlife on ABC Radio.